From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The newly inaugurated U.S. Space Force launched a mysterious mission on Sunday with an unmanned test space plane called the X-37B, which was built by Boeing. According to Reuters, the launch is part of, quote, Mission America Strong, to conduct power beaming tests, study radiation on crops, and launch a satellite. President Trump on Friday triumphantly unveiled the new Space Force flag at the White House Oval Office in front of cameras, a flag that looks suspiciously like that of the Starfleet flag in the popular sci-fi show Star Trek. In fact, in just days, a fictitious Netflix television program called Space Force will debut, starring actor Steve Carell, blurring the line between reality and fiction even more. Meanwhile, nearly 90,000 Americans have died in just 7 weeks from the coronavirus pandemic. My guest is Carl Grossman, a professor of journalism at State University of New York College at Old Westbury. He's the author of the book, The Wrong Stuff, The Space Program's Nuclear Threat to Our Planet, and an associate of the media watchdog group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Welcome to the program, Carl.
A pleasure to be on it.
So you and I talked last year about Space Force and how this was this triumphalist idea that Trump had thrown his weight behind. It had started out as almost a joke coming out of his mouth. Here we are in the midst of a pandemic, the worst threat to public health in memory, and Trump unveiled a new flag, and there's been a new launch on Sunday. What does this mean?
Well, very importantly, when that new Space Force flag was unveiled in the Oval Office last week, Trump declared space is going to be the future, both in terms of defense and offense. And that's really important, offense. I mean, all through the years of Star Wars, Reagan's claim was that it's defensive. It wasn't, in fact, defensive. But here, Trump is, he's right out there. This is an offensive project. Indeed, when on December 20th, he signed the National Authorization Act for Defense Spending, which provides for this separate branch of U.S. Armed Forces, the Space Force, he declared that the U.S., through the Space Force, is going to take the high ground. And what that means in military purposes is, if you're on a mountaintop or on a hill, you're on the high ground, you can dominate what's below. And then further, he declared that it's not enough to have American presence in space. What Trump said was we must achieve dominance in space. So what this is all about is a scheme by the United States to achieve dominance in space, despite, and this is so important for listeners, viewers to understand, the Outer Space Treaty of 1967, in which the United States, the United Kingdom, the former Soviet Union, those three countries put it together. It's now been signed by virtually all the nations on Earth. And what it declares is that space is a global commons to be used for peaceful purposes. The United States now with its Space Force is saying, the hell with the Outer Space Treaty. Forget about space for peaceful purposes. We're going to go up there. We're going to seize the high ground. And we're going to, control space somehow. And from space, this high ground, control the Earth below.
Now, one of the things that General John Raymond, who was named the head of Space Force earlier this year, one of the things he said when the flag was unveiled was he was referring to the U.S.'s dependence on the global positioning system satellites that are in space, you know, the GPS that our cell phones deeply rely on. He said the U.S. is at a strategic inflection. This, as in the Space Force's launch, is an opportunity to remain the best in the world, to stay ahead of those world threats. I'm not sure what he was talking about. I mean, don't all nations depend on those satellites?
Absolutely. Whether it's our iPhone or whether it's our GPS satellites, it's so important, critically important. In fact, Edgar Mitchell, He was an astronaut who, he spoke at a rally that was organized by the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space, a rally that was opposed to space weaponization, space nuclearization, and they're connected. And he said, if there is a war in space, it's going to be the last war in space, because there'd be so much debris, which would be affecting satellites, which would be affecting the International Space Station. It would rain debris down on the planet. In fact, it would be all but impossible for anybody to get up and out and to go on a space mission for centuries, if not millennia. Be such a mess. What the new commander who you cited of the Space Force is really talking about is, what Trump is talking about. For the U.S. to achieve dominance in space somehow, and to do it. And let me touch on the nuclear connection. What Star Wars was predicated on, which is what ultimately...
Not the movie franchise, but the space program under Reagan.
Well, Reagan wanted to have it called for strategic defense. Again, that's been the alibi all along, defense, strategic defense initiative. But it was nicknamed Star Wars. And what that was predicated on, and what the architecture of this new move to weaponize space will be based on, battle platforms ultimately energized by nuclear power. James Abramson, who at one point was the commander of the Strategic Defense Initiative, Star Wars, declared that without a long extension cord back down to Earth bringing up power, we wouldn't have the power for the weapons we want to see on these battle platforms, hypervelocity guns and particle beams and laser weapons. So nuclear power and the push to weaponize space have long gone very closely together.
So essentially, in order for the war-fighting space force, war-fighting capable space force that Trump is envisioning, in order for that to become feasible, the only source of energy that could power such weapons would be nuclear energy. And so we're talking about putting this extremely dangerous energy production technology into space. We're not seeing any of that in the press coverage of what Trump is unveiling. So let's talk about that aspect of this a little bit. Is, as far as you can tell, is the timing of, you know, this flag that just basically is a copy of the Star Trek flag, Starfleet flag in Star Trek, is this flag unveiling and this launch of this space plane on Sunday, is this all part of a way for Trump to deflect from the fact that we have a tragedy unfolding in our country right now that he really is choosing not to do anything about?
In part, he can boost the Space Force delusion, in fact. Indeed, you'd mentioned that it started off as a joke. And a few years ago, he spoke to a group of Marines in California, and he spoke about how we need a Space Force, and he got all kind of cheers. And from that, he got the idea, well, I'm going to get serious on a Space Force, and let's have a Space Force as a separate branch of the U.S. military. But in fact, the history of having a Space Force weaponizing space from space, dominating the Earth below and indeed dominating space, goes back to the early development of a U.S. space program. It involves Nazis, in fact. After World War II, the U.S., under what was called Project Paperclip, brought 1,000 former Nazi scientists to the United States, including, for example, Werner von Braun, who was the person who developed the V-2 rocket, the Vengeance 2 rocket for Nazi Germany. He came over here, and he and some of the other former Nazi scientists put together what was called the Redstone rocket. It was the first U.S. rocket capable of carrying a nuclear weapon. And he went on, he became associate director of NASA, Werner von Braun did. And he and his colleagues, who in fact should have been tried for crimes against humanity, not brought over to the United States to help develop a space program, I have a book called Weapons in Space, which spends pages describing the kind of plans they laid out for. In fact, at one point, there was a program for nuclear-powered satellites. It's way, way back in the late 40s. So there's a long, long history here. What occurs quickly through history, so you can understand the arc, is that in the 50s, in 1957, the Soviets launched a Sputnik, the first satellite. The U.S. became very concerned that, hey, in this so-called space race, the Soviet Union is going to beat us. I mean, they're so ahead of us. So what finally occurred was that the U.S. worked with the Soviet Union, worked with the United Kingdom, put together the Outer Space Treaty, which, as I say, declared that space should be used for peaceful purposes, a global commons, and quite important too, forbidden would be weapons of mass destruction in space. In recent years, actually recent decades, Russia, now it's Russia, not the Soviet Union, China, and our neighbor Canada have worked to broaden the Outer Space Treaty of 1967 with what's called the Prevention of an Arms Race in Outer Space, the Paros Treaty. And the Paros Treaty would forbid, would outlaw any weapons in space, period. And it has to be passed, has to be approved, this international treaty, through the United Nations. And I've been to the UN and watched the vote for the Paros Treaty. Nation after nation votes in favor of it. And then my country, the United States, votes no and essentially vetoes the Paros Treaty through the years. It's truly tragic because I've been to China, I've been to Russia, I've spoken to diplomats, I've quoted them in my work about whether Russia or China indeed wants to go up into space and deploy weapons and so forth. And what I'm told is it's so expensive. This isn't like buying a Bradley fighting vehicle. We're talking about billions and billions of dollars being wasted on space warfare. We don't want to do it. But let me tell you, if the U.S. under Trump does this, if the U.S. moves ahead as there's 16,000 people in the Space Force now. They're talking about a budget next year of $15 billion. Just in March, the Space Force deployed its first offensive weapon. It's a satellite jamming system, and there'll be more. You mentioned the military space plane. There's all kind of schemes, all kind of plans. If this occurs, if the weaponization of space occurs, you're going to see Russia, you're going to see China up there too. The heavens become a war zone.
We're going to basically start a new arms race, but in space, so much more dangerous. Now, on this issue of the money that the Space Force will require, are we seeing any pushback from Democrats to these expenses? Democrats, House Democrats last week voted on a bill to increase financial aid to the most vulnerable Americans, not the most perfect bill, but still they're looking for ways in which to financially support Americans that are struggling during this coronavirus crisis. But I'm not really hearing much opposition to funding Space Force. Even the media coverage of Space Force is largely laudatory. It seems as though people just sort of fall in line with this idea that any extension of the military is important to support because it's a patriotic thing to do.
Well, a lot of the media, I'm an associate, I'm on the board actually of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, FAIR, a wonderful organization. And FAIR has been an entity which has challenged the misinformation of so much of establishment media. Here, what so much of establishment media have done is kind of the swallow the baloney of the Trump administration, the aerospace industry, and other promoters of space warfare, believing that Russia and China are going to be threats to us up there in space. So we have to prepare now, develop a space force, and meet Russia and China. But as I say, my experience over the years is that Russia and China, and again, this effort for a prevention of an arms race in outer space, where there'd be no weapons in space, and the Outer Space Treaty would be broadened and truly strengthened, has been led by our neighbor Canada. And we shouldn't be paranoid about Canada for certain. It's the U.S. that is trying to move up into space. And as I say, Russia and China are going to meet us in kind if we do this. There'll be no going back if there's battle platforms and laser weapons and hypervelocity guns and particle beams and nuclear reactors. I was speaking about Edgar Mitchell and debris. Part of that debris would be nuclear debris from the nuclear reactors raining down, truly raining down on Earth. So this is something that we all have to stop. In terms of the Democrats, the Defense Authorization Act that I mentioned before, which contained the provision for a space force, a large number of Democrats, both in the House and the Senate, voted for it. They've kind of swallowed the Star Wars pill here.
Right.
They don't seem to get it, and that's very sad. Thus, where we have to go, and a listener, a viewer might think now, what am I going to do? What are we going to do? It'll have to be done on the grassroots. And the most important organization to get involved with, and folks, you should get involved with this group. It's been the leader in challenging this push to turn the heavens into a war zone. It's called the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. It conducts protests. It conducts international meetings. It's there challenging this effort, which has been going on for years, but it's not been as, except for the period when Reagan was putting his Star Wars together, it was never becoming close to a reality. Now, again, it's becoming close to a reality. The website for the Global Network and the portal in which to go and get involved as a member and get active is space4peace.org, space4peace.org. Because I think it's going to be up to, there'll be nations, some nations that will be sensible. But for example, New Zealand has passed a law prohibiting any involvement by New Zealand in the launching of nuclear systems. They realize that in New Zealand, the connection between nukes and weapons in space and so forth. But this is going to take, like the civil rights movement took, grassroots action, people all over the world, and particularly in this country, which is the big promoter of war in space.
Now, speaking of promoter of war in space, President Trump, during Friday's ceremony where he unveiled the flag, talked about the fact that the Space Force was building a, quote, super-duper missile that can travel, quote, 17 times faster than what we have right now. I'm sure Trump is relying on re-election, and if we get such a missile, ready within a few years and Trump wins re-election, we could have Trump at, with his finger on a button to release such a missile. Not a very comforting prospect at all, right?
Comforting, not at all. It's. I think what Trump was talking about, and indeed, if anybody wants to know more about this, just go to Counterpunch. And I have an article that's just come out on Counterpunch, a wonderful website. And just let me read the lead of it. The United States is seeking to acquire, quote, this is a quote from a Pentagon official in Aviation, the magazine is Aviation Week in Space Technology. And he says, the U.S. is seeking to acquire, quote, volumes of hundreds or even thousands of nuclear-capable hypersonic missiles that are stealthy and can fly undetected at 3,600 miles per hour, five times faster than the speed of sound. And then I write in the second paragraph why so many. A Pentagon official quoted in the current issue of Aviation Week in Space Technology says, we have to be careful. We're not building boutique weapons. If we build boutique weapons, we'll be very reluctant to use them.
What are boutique? What does he mean by boutique weapons?
It's an obscenity in terms of the word boutique. It's a kind of like a boutique atomic bomb, a boutique hydrogen bomb. I mean, it's nuts, boutique weapons. For the U.S. to move ahead now under Trump to acquire, and they've set up a war room in the Pentagon to help in production. In fact, the article in Aviation Week in Space Technology is headlined Hypersonic Mass Production. The subhead, Pentagon Forms Hypersonic Industry War Room, a war room to work with industry, these aerospace companies, to build. Again, we're not talking about 2, 6, or 11, hundreds or even thousands. A fellow named Lewis, who's the Pentagon official quoted, says, of nuclear-capable hypersonic missiles. Imagine your children's future, their children's future, our future, if in coming years there's these stealthy, hypersonic, nuclear-capable missiles there have been accidents in terms of what was feared to be launches of missiles, but there was time for the military, thankfully there was time, to react and realize that the Soviets weren't sending a missile our way and we weren't sending a missile towards the Soviet Union. But with these hypersonic missiles, the reaction time is going to have to be in minutes. And let me just add, Putin of Russia, this is now a year and a half ago, announced that Russia has developed a hypersonic missile, which he called the invincible weapon. The invincible weapon. Hmm. And indeed, these weapons, because the radar can't track them and so forth, will be invincible. So the time is long past to get back. Well, the Trump administration has been breaking treaty after treaty, international treaties to have arms control. We have to get back to those treaties. We have to realize that these ultrasonic missiles are going to end up to be truly, well, certainly with thousands of them, to be invincible. And the Russians are going to end up with them. The Chinese are going to end up with them. And we clearly are going to have a stockpile you wouldn't believe, the number of those missiles. I mean, what we need now is peace now. We're in the middle of this calamity of COVID-19. What we're heading for, frankly, with this Trump administration is an atomic COVID-19, a nuclear COVID-19. Right.
Well, Carl, on that note, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to the website you mentioned earlier, as well as your latest piece in Counterpunch. Really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Pleasure.
My guest is Carl Grossman, professor of journalism at State University of New York College at Old Westbury. He's the author of the book, The Wrong Stuff, The Space Program's Nuclear Threat to Our Planet, and an associate of the media watchdog group, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. We've been discussing the latest on Trump's Space Force. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.